I want you to now imagine drawing a straight line on a piece of paper. Just draw a horizontal straight line on a piece of paper right now. Okay, let's make it, 6 inches long, whatever you want to make it, okay? And now I want you to draw another straight line, which is perpendicular to that straight line on the sheet of paper. You know what I mean by perpendicular? I mean like 90 degrees to it, okay? Now, let's say that you make this line, if you made the first one 6, let's say you make this one 8 inches long, okay? Okay, good. Now, I'm going to make a prediction to you. If you were to draw a line from the starting line, the first line you drew on the paper, and continue it till it reaches the end of the perpendicular line that you drew on this in that sheet of paper, making us what is called a right triangle. And if you drew it the way I said, with one side being 6 and the other side being 8, I'm going to make a prediction that that line you just drew will be exactly 10 inches long. How did I do that? How could I possibly make that prediction? How would I even know how long it would be? Well, this idea that I can make that prediction is really not such a stupendous feat of mathematics. It's pretty much what is called high school geometry. Now, you may not remember your high school geometry very well, but I want you to see if you do remember something called the Theorem of Pythagoras. Do you remember that one? Well, remember the idea that if you take that first side that you drew, the one that was, say, 6 inches long, and you multiply that 6 by itself, so it becomes 6 squared, okay, which is then how much? Yeah, 36. And you add the second side that you just drew of that triangle, the one perpendicular, which is 8 inches long, and you square that, and it becomes 8 squared, which is how much? 64. And you add 64 to 36, you get the number, yes, 100. And if you take the square root of that, you get the number 10. And the Pythagorean theorem says just exactly that. It says that that third line you drew, which in the language of geometry is called the hypotenuse of that triangle, that the hypotenuse squared, the number you get by multiplying its length by itself, is equal to the sum of the square of the two sides. In other words, it's equal to the first side squared plus the second side squared. Add together, you get the hypotenuse side squared. This formula is an extremely important formula in not only in geometry or in navigation, but it's so much a part of physics that I can't tell you how many. It would take me more than I have time to even discuss anything to discuss just how many times this formula is used in physics. It's used everywhere. It's a very important formula. Okay, now that you've done this, and I assume that you've done it now, it works regardless of what two numbers I use. I could use any two numbers, any two sides, whether 6, I can use 5 3/4, or I can use 150, or whatever length I want to make for that first side that I drew. And I can use any length I want for the second perpendicular side that I drew. It doesn't matter. And if I square each of those sides and add them together, they will give me the third side, the hypotenuse squared. Now, physicists have a way of saying that in a shorthand way. And this is where most people get, oh my God, I can't understand that. This is where everybody gets really nervous. And they think, oh, I can't understand this. It's beyond me. I don't want to understand this. Bear with me for a while, as I'm going to teach you something that if you get over this hurdle, suddenly anything in physics, any of the mathematical formula in physics will no longer frighten you. It's been a well-known thing, in fact, that popular writers of science and popular speakers of science like myself generally try to avoid any kind of mathematical description in what they say, because people have a psychological fear of mathematics that probably started when something happened in your past when you were a kid that blocked you from this. I want to get that block out of the way, because really you can do this. I want you now to imagine that instead of making that side 6, we're going to make that side A. What? A. What is A? A is any number, whatever number you want it to be. It could be 6, it could be 15, whatever you want it to be. Okay? It's just A. All right? And I want you to take that second side, the one perpendicular, and I want you to make that B. Just call it B. Okay? So now the formula we've just discovered and just written down is simply A squared plus B squared. That's like 6 squared plus 8 squared, what we had before. Same thing, but instead of 6 and 8, we have A and B. So therefore, the result of adding A squared plus B squared, well, how can you add letters together? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense, so we make up something that makes sense. We say that's C squared. A squared plus B squared equals C squared, where if A stands for one side and B stands for the other, C stands for the hypotenuse, the third side. It's pretty simple, isn't it? I mean, you know, play with it a while. Use different numbers, draw different triangles, and measure them. In fact, what I would suggest you do right now as a little exercise is take out a sheet of paper and draw a line of any length you wish. Draw another line perpendicular to it as long as you wish it to be. And then calculate the sides squared, as you know how to do from what I just explained to you, and then predict what the hypotenuse will be. This is what's called doing an experiment. This is what physicists do. They make a prediction based upon what they've set up. If I do this and I do that, what will the result be? Make a prediction about how long that hypotenuse would be. I predict it to be the sum of A squared plus B squared. And that'll be the number squared, but now you have to do something called take the square root to actually get it. What do I mean by a square root? Well, a square root is that number which, when multiplied by itself, gives C squared. In other words, we're trying to find C. C times C is what we mean by C squared. Okay? Is this making sense to you yet? Because if you can just grab this, and this can hold on, and you can just grab this, I'm about to take you into a whole other world, but you got to hang on to this. You got to know this. You got to feel it. You got to play with it a while. So if you want to, you can maybe take a break right now and play with it for a while. Do these kinds of experiments that I've just said and see if you can make predictions about C, the hypotenuse of that triangle, based upon what you measure for A and B using the formula A squared plus B squared equals C squared, and then take the square root of C squared, which gives you C, make a prediction for that C. If you don't know how to take a square root, you just guess at a number. You could probably, if you have a calculator, maybe your calculator even has that square root funny sign on it, which allows you to do that. But if you can't, you just have to guess. Like if you have the number C squared and it's 19, well, what's the square root of 19? Well, it can't be 10 because 10 squared is 100. It can't be 5 because 5 squared is 25. It can't be 4 because 4 squared is 16. Ah, but 4 squared is 16, 5 squared is 25. So it's got to be a number between 4 and 5. That's the way you do this. You do this by hook or crook. You do this by guessing. Okay? All right. Now we're going to go into space-time. And I'm going to explain to you what happened to our two space travelers as they were traveling to Mars, when one of them took off and came back and spent less time in doing so. I'm going to explain to you why that actually happened. Okay. Are you there? All right. Good. Now, I want you to imagine that the first side of that triangle, which we call A, okay, which we then squared to get A squared, I want you to imagine that represents how far the second rocket ship travels as it moves away from the first rocket ship. Okay? Now, I want you to now look at that perpendicular line, which is line B. I want you to imagine that that line represents how much time was spent aboard that rocket ship as watched and observed by you who watched the traveler travel away from you. You're in a first spaceship watching him go, okay? And you measure his time to be that length. Now, wait a minute. How can you measure time and space? They're different things. I mean, space you measure in feet or miles, and time you measure in seconds. How can you make time and space the same thing? You already know the answer. How far is it to work? 45 minutes. You just made time and space the same thing. Well, what are you really doing when you're making time and space the same thing? What you're doing is you're putting in a speed. And the speed that you put in for you is the speed of your car. The speed of my car is roughly 45 to 50 miles per hour when I drive to work. So that gives you a way to relate time and space. It's the speed that you use as your reference. Well, can you guess what reference speed we're going to be using in Einstein's relativity, or what we're going to be using in this particular adventure we're talking about? If you guessed C, the speed of light, C is the symbol for the speed of light. Forget that. I also use it for the hypotenuse, but forget that for a moment. If you're going to use the speed of light as your reference, then if the spaceship traveled away from you while you were in your spaceship and went for 5 hours traveling away from you, then it would have traveled a distance that the speed of light would have traveled in 5 hours. That's what we mean by that amount of time. Of course, it wasn't going at the speed of light. It went the distance that you measured, which may have been less than that. But it doesn't matter what it is. We'll just pretend whatever it is. Okay, now we've got a triangle, because then we can draw a hypotenuse to that same triangle we had before. But one leg of this triangle is now a time leg, and the other leg of the triangle is a space leg. Okay? And this is where... remember I told you about this weird inner feeling you have going on inside of you? That sense of rhythm that you have going on inside of you? That thing about you which both Einstein and Richard Feynman say we can't get hold of? We're getting a glimpse of it when I tell you this formula. What happens is instead of adding a squared plus b squared to get c squared, you actually subtract one square from the other to get the hypotenuse squared. In this case, we take the perpendicular line, the T line, we square that, and we subtract from it the space line, the X line, the line of space, and we get a number, which is the hypotenuse, which on your sheet of paper looks long, just as it would on a normal triangle. But in actual numbers, it's been stretched, and what it comes out to be is a number which is smaller than either of the two sides. And what is that number? What is meant by that number? It's something which is called proper time. And proper time is not the time you spent with Aunt Agatha drinking tea. Proper time is the time spent by the traveler in the second rocket ship as he experiences time. In other words, the proper time is the time the second traveler is actually experiencing. And for him, since it's the difference of two squares, that number comes out to be less than the time you measure for him to travel. And that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is all there is to Einstein's special theory of relativity. If you can understand a squared plus b squared equals c squared, you can understand b squared minus a squared equals c squared, and you've got relativity theory. Now, this is why we have the notion that a moving clock can actually go slower, or appear to go slower, relative to a stationary clock. This is where that idea comes from. Moving time goes slow. And now, let's take this to an extreme. Suppose we now consider that instead of a space traveler traveling out from you as you're sitting in your rocket ship on the way to Mars, let's imagine that you have just sent out a message, a light signal message, maybe a radio signal message, whatever you want to call it, and it's just been sent out at the speed of light. How much proper time does light spend going the distance it's going? Well, in this particular case, if you take the time leg and compare it to the space leg, they're actually equal in length. If I take b squared and I subtract from it a squared, but in this time a equals b, I have b squared minus b squared, what do I end up with? Well, what's any number squared minus the same number squared? What's any number minus the same number? What's 5 minus 5? What's 9 minus 9? What's 16 minus 16? You know the answer. It's zero. In other words, the proper time for light is zero. Or, to put it another way, for light, there is no time. Light is the essence of that internal feeling that you have. In fact, you might think of yourself as a body of light. And this is really the great mystery. This is the magical moment in which the physical world that we're going to talk about more as we go further into relativity theory and time travel, and the internal world, that feeling you have inside of you, this is where they overlap. This is where they're together. This is where one is the progenitor of the other.